Chapter 19. Sarveau lay in the hospital bed and nodded as Deputy Prime Minister Malcolm Hunt was ushered into his hospital room. He smiled. "It was good of you to come, Malcolm. I'm well aware of the hell you're going through with the House of Commons." Out of habit, Hunt held out his hand, but quickly withdrew it on seeing the salve-coated arms of the Prime Minister. "Pull up a chair and get comfortable," Sarveau said graciously. "Smoke if you care to." "The effects of my pipe might lose me the medical vote come next election," Hunt smiled. "Thank you, but I'd better pass." Sarveau came straight to the point. "I have talked with the Director of Air Safety. He assures me that the tragedy at James Bay was no accident." Hunt's face whitened suddenly. "How can he be positive?" "A piece of engine cowling was found a half mile beyond the runway," Sarveau explained. "Analysis showed fragments embedded in it that matched a type of rocket used by the Army's Argo ground-to-air launcher. An inventory at the Val Jalbert arsenal discovered two were missing, along with several warheads." "Good Lord," Hunt's voice trembled. "That means all those people on your aircraft were murdered."
"The evidence points in that direction," Sarveau said placidly.
"The Free Quebec Society," said Hunt, turning angry. "I can think of no one else who could be responsible."
"I agree, but their guilt may never be proved."
"Why not?" asked Hunt. "The FQS are either out of touch with reality or complete idiots to think they could get away with it. The Mounties will never permit the terrorists behind a crime of such magnitude to escape unpunished. As a radical movement, they are finished."
"Do not be too optimistic, old friend.
My attempt at assassination does not fall into the same category as the bombings, kidnappings, and slayings of the last 40 years. Those were carried out by political amateurs belonging to FQS cells, who were apprehended and convicted. The slaughter at James Bay was conceived and directed by professionals. That much is known by the fact they left no trace of their existence. The best guess by the chief commissioner of the Mounties is that they were hired from outside the country." Hunt's eyes were steady. "The FQS terrorists might yet push us into a state of civil war."
"That must not come to pass," Sarveau said quietly. "I will not allow it."
"It was you who threatened the use of troops to keep the separatists in line."
Sarveau smiled a dry smile. "A bluff. You are the first to know.
I never intended a military occupation of Quebec. Repression of a hostile people would solve nothing."
Hunt reached in his pocket. "I believe I'll have that pipe now."
"Please do." The two men sat silent while the Deputy Prime Minister puffed his briar bowl to life. Finally, he blew a blue cloud toward the ceiling.
"So what happens now?" asked Hunt.
"The Canada we know will disintegrate while we stand helpless to prevent it," answered Sarveau sadly. "A totally independent Quebec was inevitable from the start. Sovereignty association was merely a half-assed measure. Now Alberta wants to go it alone. Ontario and British Columbia are making rumblings about nationhood."
"You fought a good fight to keep us together, Charles. No one can deny you that."
"A mistake," said Sarveau. "Instead of a delaying action, you and I, the party, the nation, should have planned for it. Too late. We are faced with a Canada divided forever."
"I can't accept your ominous forecast," Hunt said, but the life had gone out of his voice.
"The gap between your English-speaking provinces and my French Quebec is too great to span with patriotic words," said Sarveau, staring Hunt in the eyes. "You are of British descent, a graduate of Oxford. You belong to the elite who have always dominated the political and economic structure of this land. You are the establishment. Your children study in classrooms under a photograph of the Queen. French Quebec children, on the other hand, are stared down upon by Charles de Gaulle. And, as you know, they have little opportunity for financial success or a prominent position in society."
"But we are all Canadians," Hunt protested.
"No, not all. There is one among us who has sold out to Moscow." Hunt was startled. He jerked the pipe from between his teeth.
"Who?" he asked incredulously. "Who are you talking about?"
"The leader of the FQS," answered Sarveau.
I learned before my trip to James Bay that he has made deals with the Soviet Union that will take effect after Quebec leaves the Confederation. What's worse, he has the ear of Jules Guerrier. Hunt appeared lost. The Premier of Quebec? I can't believe that. Jules is French-Canadian to the core. He has little love for communism and makes no secret of his hate for the FQS. But Jules, like ourselves, has always assumed we were dealing with a terrorist from the gutter. A mistake. The man is no simple misguided radical. I'm told he holds a high position in our government. Who is he? How did you come by this information? Sarva shook his head. Except to say that it comes from outside the country, I cannot reveal my source, even to you. As to the traitor's name, I can't be certain. The Russians refer to him by various code names. His true identity is a well-kept secret. My God, what if something should happen to Jules? Then the Parti Québécois would crumble, and the FQS could step into the vacuum. What you're suggesting is that Russia will have a toehold in the middle of North America. Yes, Sarva said ominously. Exactly.